Right, mother, daughter, breast of friends, and this time it's not Becky that's introducing it, it's me, Wendy. This one is slightly different. It's more of a riddle, really. It was one of the craziest times of my life. You couldn't make it up. It is stranger than fiction. So here goes. Prepare yourself for the most ridiculous story. But my goodness me, hasn't it made an impact?
Around 80% of breast cancers are detected because women themselves notice changes in their breasts. Make it easier to spot with the Aware Self-Examination Kit. Available at awarebreastcheck.co.uk. Proud sponsors of the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast.
It was the most bizarre time of my life. I had surgery in 93. Our family were used to help find the BRCA1 gene. And in 1994, a company in America called Myriad Genetics in Utah actually patented the BRCA1 gene. They, I suppose, put the final brick in the wall. I wasn't overly aware of it until Horizon got in touch with me, a TV programme, and said, could we come and interview you about the patent in America and on the BRCA1 gene? And I said, yes, of course, that's fine. And so we had quite an interesting conversation. It made a good programme and I was quite a part of it all the way through. And they asked me what my view was. And I said, well, it's been a collaborative approach from a worldwide approach, not just one. But why should one company who actually managed to put, let's say, the last brick in the wall, actually take possession of this? But I suppose in a way I didn't overly worry about it because what they did in America is what they did in America and it didn't affect us. Now, fast forward to 1997, and I received a phone call from a lady called Helena from the Gaia Foundation, and she said, do you know there's a new law being passed, a directive, which is a kind of big piece of law, legislation, whatever you want to call it, in the European Parliament to make genes patentable? Well, I really didn't know what she was on about, and so she explained that there was a big lobby in Europe at the European Parliament to get this piece of law passed that would make genes patentable. And it was so well hidden in about a 50-page document. I think I still have it actually somewhere. But in the middle of this document, it said, a gene is not patentable. That's part A. Then part B was, notwithstanding that, an element isolated through from the human body by means of a technical procedure, including a gene or partial gene sequence, may be patentable. Now, most people, when they hear that, they think it's the technical procedure that's going to be patented. But if you read it again and again and again, you can see it says including the gene or partial gene sequence. So I just used a bit of common sense and I thought, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to ring up the European Patent Office and the UK Patent Office and ask them if this legislation, this directive is adopted by the European Parliament in July 1997, if this vote goes through, does that mean that genes will be patentable? And the answer was just one answer, yes. So I said that if that happens then, will Myriad in America be able to extend their patent into Europe? And they said, yes. So I got the answer straight away, which any MEP or any politician could have done. All they got to do is pick up the phone. So I then rang up whoever it was. I think his name was Tony Chapman, in the Department of Health, and that was his job, and he was just blustered around it, and he said, well, we're looking at this and it probably won't affect the NHS. But I knew that it actually would affect the NHS because they would not be exempt from this patent. So I wrote to every minister I could find. I even wrote to Tony Blair. I wrote to all the newspapers, and it wasn't really sexy enough for, you know, the Daily Mirror or Daily Mail or whatever. But the broadsheets picked it up, and suddenly everybody became interested in it. In fact, I couldn't believe it. I was on the front page of The Guardian, Wendy Watson spearheading the gene patent campaign, against the gene patent campaign. The body in question is mine. That was the headline in the Independent and the Times, all of the broadsheets. They'd got me absolutely front page. And I was the lobby against the directive. And I thought, good grief, this, I don't want me to do it. I'm telling the ministers, I'm even telling Tony Blair, I'm telling the broadsheets, because I think people ought to know so that those in a position that can fight it can do it. But suddenly, it's me running the campaign. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to do it then, aren't I? I mean, what can I do? And it was just the most bizarre experience. I found out through Helena that there was a meeting in London organised by the Genetic Interest Group called GIG, G-I-G, Genetic Interest Group. And I invited myself to this meeting, and it was a patient meeting about the patenting. And when I got there, I said, I just want to know why you are keen to get genes patented, because it's not going to be helpful. It's going to make genetic testing for breast cancer too expensive for the NHS, because it costs us about £500 for a test that Myriad charge $2,500 for. And all the figures that I'd given to Baroness Cumberledge the year before would be just worthless, because that wouldn't be what it would be. It would be five times as much. And so anyway, when I mentioned this, the meeting was brought to an abrupt halt, and everybody said, thank you very much for attending. And that was it. End of story. And I thought, I don't get what's going on here. This is very, very odd. So I looked into it much further, and it became, I got in touch with a lot of these patient groups. And Alistair Kent, he was the president of, or the chairman or whatever it was, of GIG. And he'd got all these patients to go out to the European Parliament on the day of the vote and be put up in the Holiday Inn and being told what a nice time they'd have. And all they had to do was wear T-shirts that said no patent, no cure, and give out leaflets to the parliamentarians, and just that was what they had to do. That was their job. And it was interesting because 3-4 years earlier, Alistair Kent had said that in no circumstances should genes ever be patentable. So I wondered what had happened that made him change his tune. Anyway, I mean, I can't tell you that. George Monbiot, he wrote an article, Beware the Wheelchairs. And this was all due to them being there, you know, sort of lobbying like nobody's business. And in Wikipedia, it says that it's the biggest lobby the European Parliament had ever witnessed. And so I started to go over, before the vote, I got in touch with Gareth. I said, what do you think about patenting of genes? And he said, it's diabolical. It will not help research. It will not foster research. It will kill it. Because once a company has actually got a patent on a gene, they will be able to put their flag in it. There'd be no incentive to do any further research, because they may as well just sit there and wait for the universities and whatever to do the research, find the gene, and then say, ah, oh, that's my gene. I need this much royalties and this much licence fee. So he was on board. And once I knew that, you know, I'd got his backing, he wrote to the British Society for Human Genetics, and they all backed me up. And in the end, I couldn't believe I'm sitting there. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever known in my life. I'm sitting in a little cottage in the Peak District with a young daughter wanting beans on toast. And I'm on the phone on on an interview with on the World Service against the head of SmithKline Beecham in America. His name was Ed Lentz. And I'm one side of the debate. And, you know, saying, well, why do you need to patent genes? You know, by all means, if you find a cure using a gene, of course you can patent it. Of course, that would be quite right. But to actually patent the sequence is wrong because it stops anybody else from having any incentive to find cures to, for it. So anyway, the upshot of it all was that I ended up backwards and forwards to the European Parliament. Gareth came with me. The BBC came with me. I made appointments to see various MEPs. And I've got to say, I wasn't massively impressed, to be fair. But I didn't find that, you know, it seemed an awful lot of coffee bars and things like that going on. But anyway, there you go. That's another story. But at least I went out there and I tried to explain to everybody, in those that spoke English, and I could manage a smattering of Spanish and a smattering of French, and that was it, really. But any other language, I had no idea. So I did what I could to try and explain to them what this directive really meant. And they, most of them, really thought that it meant the technical procedure. And I said, look, I have contacted the European Patent Office. I've contacted the UK Patent Office. This means that it will be the gene that's patented. This is what it means. Don't take my word for it. Ring up yourself. But I was no real match for a £30 million pharmaceutical lobby. I really wasn't. I'm somebody on my own with a little army, if you like, against a massive, I'd got, with no money. I mean, I'd got no money to do this with. I'd just use whatever money I could scrounge up to fly around and do this. And Joan Ruddock, she was a minister, and she wrote a fairly sort of concerned email. No, not email, a letter, actually. I don't think I even had a computer then, to be honest. Everything was done by fax. And Tony Blair wrote back and said, yes, we are aware and we're keeping an eye on it. Well, I mean, that is no use keeping an eye on anything. And everybody loftily thought that they would be, the NHS would be exempt. And so I now get in touch with a High Court barrister who put me into, well, his name was Hugh Laddie. It was lovely. He rang me one morning very early and he said, yes, if this law goes through, then the NHS will not be exempt. It will, everybody in Europe will have to, the patent will apply to all of them. And I did everything I could to try to prevent it happening. As it happens, the law was actually passed. I wasn't big enough to stop it, but I'd made such a fuss that it had raised a lot of profile. I was on the Today programme four times in 1 week, which was more than Tony Blair was on it, about this. I was put against Alistair Kent, and he was, you know, I was trying to say, well, why do you think that? Why? You know, I mean, obviously, there must have been some backing. I don't know. Who knows? I can't really say that and I can't make any accusations, but he changed his tune from 1993. So who knows? Anyway, the law was passed. But as soon as that was passed, Myriad applied for a patent in Europe. However, I found out a little bit more about patent law, and one of the articles in patent law is that it must not be contrary to public morality. Now, this clearly would be contrary to public morality because it would make it too expensive to have genetic tests, and that would cause people to not be able to have a test and would cost lives. And also, I was in touch with a Danish, from Denmark, a company, who were looking at the sequence application that Myriad had put forward to the Patent Office, and they managed to find a mistake, so it got thrown out. So between us, we stopped the patent. The law is that you can patent genes, and as crazy as it is, as it seems, that is the law. However, there are ways to prevent it from actually happening. And I thank goodness that I've actually managed to do that, because it was saving. I think I worked it out when I actually wrote my book, which was in 2012. At that point, we'd saved £55 million to the NHS on stopping the patent of that gene. And for that, I think that's probably why I got the Tesco. Well, it was why I got the Tesco Mum of the Year award. And but it was the most crackers part of my life. I mean, I cannot even imagine that I would being involved. I mean, I'm the sort of person, I want to go out. I was singing and acting and dancing and playing golf and just enjoying life. And, I got rid of this whole risk. I was living life to the full. I was having fun. The helpline was busy. Everything was great. And suddenly I'm landed with this load of nonsense. And it was consuming me. And most people weren't even gene literate at those days, let alone, you know, you talk about patent law and directives and European parliaments, and most people would say, right, well, I've got to go to the shop now or whatever. because
that's the point, isn't it?
It's just not an interesting subject to most. And yet, really, it had to be interesting because it was critical, absolutely critical.
And you think about, and this is how, you know, when you put it again into like the layman's terms of it, in that your battle and your, it's not a battle, but what you wanted to do was to make sure that how you felt ultimately, what you had done for yourself, you could give to others. Right. And that was living life, as you said, and going off and doing your theatre, etc., without this worry. Now, to be able to give that to other people, it would take, to orchestrate everything else beneath it. And when it comes to the gene patent, that would ultimately kind of throw that off.
Yeah, that would wreck it.
That would wreck everything, because it wouldn't make it cost effective. And you mentioned right in the very first podcast that we've done, and it's a shame, but it's fact, that ultimately everything always comes down to money.
I'm afraid it does. And so you have to show that a drug is cost effective, you know, saves enough lives, you know, it is how it is. You know, we don't have an endless pot of money, sadly.
Yeah. And it is a shame, but that is the way of the world. But that's what. But you were trying to do that, and you know, making genetic testing so that it was possible for everybody, so that it was affordable for the NHS. Therefore, everyone could gain access to it. You know, and then it was going to save the NHS money in the long run because of the prevention side of stuff. But ultimately, it came down to this one little thing that could have literally gone unnoticed.
Oh, if it hadn't been for Helena phoning me I think originally the Horizon programme, doing the thing in America, although I was a bit sort of, well, I suppose what they do in America.
I can't really do
a lot about that. Although, since then, America have actually thrown out Myriad's patent. And talking about America, funnily enough, a lady came over from, her name was Shabita Parthasi, and she came over to meet me, and we had quite a long chat, and she did quite a lot of papers on me, and they're still on the internet. But also, I found out that I'm a teaching course at Princeton University. I mean, what's that about?
It's amazing is what it is.
Wendy Watson versus Myriad Genetics is a teaching course at Princeton University.
Yay!
Well, I mean, I've never known anything so nonsensical in all my life.
It's called Leaving a Legacy, Mother, and then this course.
I know.
Making history books.
Well, it's crackers. It's crackers. I mean, how was it down to me? How could
because
it be?
Because you had the right intention and you had the right drive. And again, it comes down to the medical profession. You've got to stay in, you're in your lane sort of thing, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? But you're not in your lane, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, all of the medical profession backed me. The British Society for Human Genetics, everybody backed me. They gave me all the figures and everything. When I wanted to know how much money it had actually saved, they were the ones that provided that figure, not me. You know, how many tests had been done and so on, and the difference it would have been. And so obviously, I don't know how much it would have been by now, good grief, because we do so many tests. And incidentally, there was another interesting point. I came across a company called Affymetrix in America who developed a gene chip that could read, you could put it into a computer and it would read 50 genes at a time. And they couldn't develop this chip any further because there were so many patents on so many of the genes in America. So that company never really did get going.
Because of
patents. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't want us to go down the line at the moment because I think there's a lot out there at the minute. And I think people's eyes have been opened a lot more over the last few years of kind of what rules the world and who rules the world. And I think, you know, you could probably really get into that, but we'll probably touch on it again at another point. But it is something definite, you know, but well done.
Well,
it's amazing.
The only thing I could do was do what I had to do. So you've heard the story, and following on from that, Shobita Parthasi from the USA, she was I don't really know what she was, but she was very much into studying the whole law on genes and patenting and everything. And she came over to visit me. And subsequently, I didn't really take a lot of notice. I just told her everything that had happened. And subsequently, there were loads of articles that appeared all over the internet to do with the interviews that she'd done with me. And then eventually there was a big move in America to actually change the law in America to stop Myriad's patent or sole exclusive rights over the BRCA genes. And I didn't even get involved. And I am so glad that I didn't, because I'd had quite enough with Europe. That was quite enough for me. So I let America get on with it and do it for itself. And yes, Myriad's patent did get stopped in the USA eventually. So there you go. That's the completion of that story.
Grace and Solicitors, where legal expertise meets compassionate service. Proud sponsors of the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast.